from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or trap pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Odyssey celebrates National Hispanic Heritage Month. Brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
And a minimal salary cap hit. Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Zach and Josh. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at NorthtownAuto.com.
Good morning. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at NorthtownAuto.com. We've got a beautiful day outside here in our Amherst studios, much better than yesterday, which was a lot of rain. Just so much rain.
Yeah.
It was so dark in the studio yesterday.
Kind of out of nowhere, too.
And then it got sunny.
Right.
And then it kind of looked like it was going to rain again. It was too much. It was too much for me.
It ruined my afternoon. I was going to go on a nice little hike and just was like, I don't want to get wet.
I'm good.
And then I was like, oh, cool, it didn't rain. And then it did.
Although now, like, isn't it like we got like 15 days in a row with no rain expected or something like that? It's something absurd. It's nice. Now.
Like summer's going out with a bang, and I love it.
Yep, we're going to be in like the 80s this week. Mm-hmm. Looking good. On that, though, the Bills. We haven't really gotten to talk about, like, week one. We were not in yesterday.
Yeah.
So
first reactions. How do you feel?
It's the thing. I want to go through this real quick because we are on a short week. It'd be one thing if the Bills were then playing on Sunday. It's like, all right, we can let this marinate a little bit more.
Right.
They're playing on Thursday. We already had the first injury report and outs for Thursday night. But real quick, I think for those that saw my Twitter, I'm not as aggressive as Nate, but mine was the first half, oh, God, what's happening? This looks terrible.
Right.
And to the second half, I mean, before that kick return touchdown, the Bills were well on their way. I mean, they were up 11 at that point. Oh, dude, I mean, it flipped
that
hard.
That kick return touchdown scared the living daylights out of me.
Yeah, everyone here in the studio who was working the game was kind of like, it was sort of like a relaxed mood of like, oh, we're whooping them. Like, this is great.
Yeah.
You know, it.
Full control.
First half of the first game, who cares? We'll let it ride. You know, it's fine. And that happened. It was like, oh, man.
There it goes.
Like, we still got to play. No, it
was funny because in the first half, my dad and I were just like watching the TV just going, this is not good. What's happening? Bad. And then the second half comes up. We're like, great, great. Yeah, this is cool. And then the kicker turn happens. We're like, wait a minute.
Still got a game. And then, of course, I mean, the last drive, I know pretty much everyone on the station has talked about the field goal of death. We were talking about it right here before we came in, just to kind of get it out of the way. For me, I was happy in the postgame when McDermott was very honest about what the situations were going to be for them to go for it. If it was fourth and two or shorter, they would have went for it. Fourth and three, it was. And as he put it, it was a long fourth and three. They were going to kick the field goal. I'd much rather the coach sticks to his guns. I don't care if I don't disagree with or if I agree with it or not. I'd much rather them not scramble and last minute change, and then everyone's kind of running out of the field when maybe they weren't planning on it, and then it gets all, you know, thrown to hell and it's a miss. And then we're complaining about that rather than the quote unquote field goal of death, which you're up six. Shut it down. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. Don't give up a touchdown. You've been pretty good about that in the second half. Don't let it up.
Yeah.
You know? That's where I was at. They almost covered. They were 6.5-point favorites, and they won by six.
Yeah.
That was one of the biggest lines of the weekend. I think the only bigger line being Cincinnati versus New England.
Which did not go
did not go well.
Plan.
So ultimately, look, NFL games are close. You very rarely get a score like New Orleans and Carolina, where I think it was 47-10. I mean, that was a complete blowout in every stretch of the imagination. Close game, but ultimately you turned it on in the second half. The defense looked much better in the second half. You got a great defensive individual performance by guys like Greg Rousseau, who had three sacks. Unbelievable. And then on the offense, 10 guys caught the ball. And I just saw today, I think Anthony over cover one was doing the all 22. Josh, there's a play where ultimately Ray Davis gets a dump off pass, takes it for like 7-8 yards.
Mm.
But the main character of the video is Dalton Kincaid.
Oh, yeah, and there's like five guys on him.
Yeah, who runs around the middle of the field, and four defenders just swarm to him.
Yep.
And Allen just, you see it. He sees Kincaid get swarmed. He goes, all right, cool, and just dumps it off to Ray Davis.
Honestly, and I don't think even Allen in the past few years would have tried that pass, but good on Josh Allen for looking at the check down.
Yeah, and
taking the easy underneath pass. And I'm sure in the moment he was probably like, I really wanted Dalton Kincaid there, and then it's that thing we've talked about for the past 2 years now or so, or maybe more, but
just
closely
take
in
the
two
easy
years.
Throws.
Take the easy throw, make the easy play. Again, going back to the Kansas City game last year, the pass where he goes to throw to Shakir in the end zone and has Diggs wide open underneath.
Mm-hmm.
I still think he makes that throw to Shakir regardless, but I wonder. If by the end of the year this year we start seeing him do these checkdowns more, would he have taken that pass to Diggs?
Because
if you're thinking about
it's a different mindset now.
But also in the scenario there, you're in a different game, you're in the playoffs, you're late, you're trying to get points on the board. I feel like most quarterbacks are going to go for the end zone in that situation.
Yeah.
But if Allen suddenly develops this, easy pass mindset, then I think there's going to be a lot of different views on the Bills this year, because you won't have these big, long, oh my God plays from Josh Allen. You won't have as many.
They're going to be sprinkled in. I mean, you have the Keon Coleman pass that was very, very good. He has two rushing touchdowns, one of which he hurdles Buda Baker.
Well, no, I'm saying in terms of the rushing will never go away. Allen will always run, which
I think even when he loses the ability, I agree with you. That's a mindset.
I'm fine with. Do it until you can't. But I'm at the point where if he does more of those passes like the one to Ray Davis, I think we're going to see a lot less of him on like highlight reels, because you're not going to see these 40-yard bombs.
You're not going to see the Anthony Davis throw to Alec Pierce, the 60-yard bomb we saw week one.
You might not see the passes to Keon Coleman like we saw on the sideline. I mean, those are the quote-unquote risky passes. And if that's what they're trying to get away from, I think that's going to be a big difference that people see in the Bills' offense this year, is you're no longer going to see, man, that was a crazy throw. Why did Allen do that?
I don't want them to get away from it fully.
No, I don't either. But I wonder if this first game is an indicator of how it's going to look.
I think it's just play smarter. Take risks when it's warranted. Don't throw the Hail Mary ball all the time, which is a big problem with Ken Dorsey's offense at this time last year, where it was just they were going deep constantly. No one was getting open. Allen had to make magic. I agree with Sal's take yesterday when he was on the show up on the Bulldog, and we'll hear from Sal coming up in about an hour. Allen is just Superman. He didn't need to be Superman, though, for the Bills to win against Arizona. He was making easy throws. It was guys like Khalil Shakir who made balance. That is something I'm upset. I didn't talk about it more in the offseason. As someone that is a big fan of his and thinks he is in for a big year, his balance, he is so, so difficult. For a guy that is not, he's not DK Metcalf, 6'3", 235 pounds. He's not that guy. He's about 6 foot. He's over 200 pounds.
But if you just go to hit him, he's going to kind of move backwards a little bit and still be up and flying past
can
you.
This be
incredible.
Can this be a Khalil Shakir show now?
I mean, it kind
of. We got to get Sal's approval, but it's got to be.
When I'm on, it sort of is.
The guy is so consistent. I mean, yep. He's Mr. Consistent. It's everything that's thrown his way, he catches it and he holds on to it and he makes some sort of a play. I mean, look at the touchdown he scored. He looks like a breakdancer in the Olympics, flipping around on the ground, reaching for the goal line.
Yep.
And even on the first pass or the first catch he made in the game, I think it was the first catch, he bounces off a defender and then just like kind of spins around him and keeps going up the field.
Yeah.
And creates a first down. It looked exactly like his play. I think it was against the Steelers last year in the playoffs.
That's exactly what I was thinking about.
But obviously, in that play, it was for a touchdown compared to, you know, just for a first down in this game. But as soon as I saw that, I'm like, I'm watching a highlight reel from last year's playoff game. It looks exactly the same. He bounces off the defender the same way. He moves around them the same way. And it's just, it's great. And I think having a receiver like that, that's your Cole Beasley replacement. That's what you've been looking for the past 3 years.
For a few years, yeah.
And I think that if you can finally replace that,
yeah,
everything else will kind of fall into
place. You saw it on Sunday where I think 10 guys caught passes.
Yes.
They were just spreading the ball around. Keon Coleman, very surprising to me. I do want to get Sal's thoughts on that as well. Because maybe I shouldn't have been surprised, but I was that. I mean, he led the way in terms of skill position players, only behind Dalton Kincaid in terms of the wide receivers, tight ends, and running backs. In terms of snap count, he led the team in targets. He led the team in receptions. He led the team in yards. And I was very impressed and pleasantly surprised that Coleman was being used like that right away. Game one, didn't have a ton of time in the preseason with Allen. He caught one pass from Allen in the preseason, game one, and that was it. And immediately see them going right to him, immediately you see a 50-50 ball. I think he's only going to be used more as the season goes on. And now, again, this is week one. Very much, this is, you know, can fluctuate, but it does feel like, you know, by week six, seven, eight, we're sitting here very much changing the expectations for a Keon Coleman rookie year. Where I think up to this point, I was somebody that was like, man, if he has 40, 45 catches, and like six of them are touchdowns, I'm ecstatic.
Yeah, and that 50-50 ball he gets on the sideline. I mean, I remember watching that, just going, what are we doing? Like this is. It's just going to either go out of bounds or it's going to fall incomplete. And he goes up and makes magic with it.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as he catches it, you know he's going to come down with it, right? It was never going to be a play of like, oh, great catch, but you fell out of bounds.
It's why they drafted him. That's what
and
he does.
That right there, I think, kind of proves everything that they've been saying all offseason after they drafted him, which was he's a down-the-line specialist. He can get contested catches. And I was one that was like, yeah, I hope so.
I would really like
if that was what he does, and here it is. It's finally in a game.
Early in the game as well, maybe the thing I'm still leaving most impressed with him is the drawing the two penalties.
Yeah, that was great.
For a guy that his biggest issue so far has been separation, for him to scare a defender enough to have to draw to cause a penalty.
Yeah, and I will
I
say
a
the,
good sign.
The one was almost close to being a double penalty because it was, I think it was the second one.
Mm-hmm.
He was getting held or something. It was a defensive pass interference call. But after the defender did what he did, Coleman kind of like threw some hands back at him.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, ooh.
Yeah.
All right. Take a break here. Yep. Let's simmer down. Like, you know, you got your flag. Like, don't ruin it now. You know, like, so it is still like a learning bit. But I do think that it's important that he was able to do that too right away. Because that is a smaller aspect of the game, but it is an important one.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you can create a lot from making a defender make a mistake, even when you're not getting the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's interesting because, like, that's so much different than any other sport. You don't really get that in a lot of other sports where it's, you know, you're celebrated for that. I mean, hockey's probably the closest one because, you know, you draw a penalty, you get a power play. Basketball, too, kind of, but it's a little more ticky-tack in basketball because of the fouls and everything. But I think with the performance he gave, it kind of negated what Xavier Worthy did for the Chiefs on Thursday night, right? I kind of forgot about what he did.
I think it's the thing is, you know, you look at the other rookie receivers around the NFL during, and again, this is only week one, so we don't want to make like any kind of like grandiose expectation or prediction or whatever, but like Marvin Harrison Jr., even the, you know, the deep ball late in the game that everyone's like, oh man, I mean, he's wide open. It's because the defender went towards the pump fake that ultimately Murray pulls back from. And then at that point, the pass rush is in his face. And really, Marvin Harrison Jr. was never, in a sense, technically open. It would have taken an otherworldly throw and timing for Murray to even get that ball off in time. That was much more of a play breakdown of they didn't necessarily bite on a pump fake. He was going to go to Greg. I believe it was Greg Dortch there, sees the defender coming in and pulls back. And then at that point, he's got to move around. He's got to do something.
He's already swarmed. He's already down.
Things are happening.
On his way down.
And he moves off of it. But he had a big drop. He only ends up with one catch. You go, of course, you brought up the Worthy game. Worthy has a play breakdown that causes him to have a wide open touchdown that still counts. Don't want to take it away from him. The end around that he had, the Mecole Hardman role that he did for years with Kansas City. He scores off that. We've joked, but, you know, it was great blocking, but also Worthy's speed was incredible. He brings a dimension to the Chiefs' offense. But then it was like Brian Thomas Jr. He had a great game. Roma Dunze really didn't do much.
He's injured.
Yeah, now he's injured. He's week to week now as well. Mm-hmm. Brian Thomas Jr., I think, had a good game.
Yep, yeah, you just said that.
Yep. I'm blanking on one, though. Who am I blanking on?
Troy Franklin didn't do anything, did he?
No.
Not in Denver. I mean, Bo Nix didn't even do anything.
Xavier Legette, I don't think, did anything. I'm blanking
Neighbors.
On. Oh, Malik Neighbors had a very good game.
Yeah.
There we go. He had a good game, but ultimately in a Giants offense that makes you wonder, why did you draft Malik Neighbors? Yeah. You don't have a quarterback.
And I think it's interesting how this wide receiver room was perceived in the draft compared to, and again, it is week one. We've only played one game. But it's kind of interesting you didn't see like one huge game. Right? Like, obviously, Worthy had two touchdowns.
A.D. Mitchell should have had one.
Oh. Forgot about
it. I'm not going to bring it up too much because everyone, I think, kind of knows if they ever were listening to the draft breakdown with myself, Derek Kramer, Nate Geary. I was not, of the Texas wide receivers, I was not an Xavier Worthy guy. I was Adonai Mitchell, like, all the way. That's who I wanted the Bills to draft, and I was quite broken up when it was nothing with Keon. I didn't really know much about Keon, but that one hurt me.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen Ian Harditz break down the Colts game.
Yeah.
Three better balls. He has like maybe three touchdowns and like is over like 150 yards.
Oh, yeah, I know. Because, I mean,
that broke my heart watching. Because I said it during the draft process and everything like that. I thought he had all of the ability to be an X, like, game-breaking wide receiver, mm-hmm. especially if teams were able to kind of, because it sounds like it's more to deal with diabetes and him not being on top of his insulin. If he went to a team with a good culture, with a good foundation to keep him right and to get him on a structure, I think you could have an all-world receiver. And that's, oh, man. I'm watching these and I'm like, oh, come on, man. Don't do this to me. I'm not saying I want him to fail, but I was like hoping. I'm like, if he's like a Michael Pittman, like a solid receiver, I'll be happy with that. He looked great.
Yeah.
And his stat line did not show up, but he looked
awesome.
Ultimately,
he only has one catch for two yards.
Yeah.
But he was targeted five times, and he probably should have had three more catches.
Yeah, but they were bad passes.
Yeah.
Anthony Richardson is going to be a fun guy to keep an eye on this year.
He is much more of a Josh Allen comparison than Trey Lance ever was.
Yeah.
Not to, you know, bounce all over the place here, but when you look at what Anthony Richardson can do and what he even did for the Colts this past weekend and even in the three games last year, he's got the cannon of an arm. He kind of has the mobility. He just needs to kind of...
See, I think he has more mobility than Allen. I think Richardson is the most impressive athlete to play the quarterback position. Just coming out of college into the NFL, like if you can harness it, you have a truly dangerous weapon.
You have to figure out how to harness it.
Yeah.
And who's their offensive coordinator?
Well, no, their head coach is Shane Steichen.
Yeah, right.
That's more what I care about is their head coach is Steichen.
He was magic in Philly.
Yep. And even last year with Gardner Minshew, they almost made the playoffs. And they were keeping it close with Houston all afternoon. And ultimately, Richardson, I think, has under 50 completion percentage. So, I mean, they're not very efficient passing the ball. But that moonshot to Alec Pierce is... It's going to go down as top three throw from this year. And it was done in the 1 o'clock window on week one.
He only...
Incredible.
He completed nine passes for 212 yards.
Yeah, one of them was a 60-yard bomb. It was awesome. It like that. If you haven't seen the throw, number one, it's Tuesday after week one. I'm surprised.
I saw an edit that somebody made with like a sky cam.
Yeah.
following the ball through the air.
It's unbelievable.
It's so good.
Real quick, though, to kind of wrap up our thoughts on week one, just one other thing that we kind of touched on there, Dalton Kincaid, I was a little frustrated that he only had two targets mm-hmm. and only one catch. But now seeing people look back through the film, I mean, he was triple, at times quadruple covered, and it really opened up the rest of the offense. So that takes away some of the worry of like, yeah. man, I thought Kincaid was going to pop off this year.
Do you have the same thought about Curtis Samuel? Because he didn't do too much.
I'm still convinced that's due to injury. That he was able to play, but his turf toe, that is a lingering injury. I think he's good enough to play, but maybe not, you know, to be the main focal point or a major focal point of the offense. I'm not too worried about that. Now, if it's week 3, 4, 5, and we're still here, I'll start to get more worried. Same with Kincaid. I mean, if we get there and it's all of a sudden it's like, okay, they're still like only triple covering him and like he's just not able to do anything and everyone else is, I'll be a little worried, but mainly for the opponents they're playing. Cause I'm like, are you guys not learning?
Curtis Samuel had 2 catches on 2 targets, 15 yards. Mm-hmm. You know,
I think that was didn't have a rushing attempt, did he?
Nope. That was it. I mean, that's fine. Yep. I thought that he was going to be more of a focal point than he was, but you're right. I didn't think about the injury stuff.
Yeah.
I also just wonder if it was sometimes the Dalton Kincaid treatment of like, you know, double, triple covered.
Yeah.
And, you know, what are you going to do in that situation? Throw to a different guy that's wide open, because if you have 3 guys on one, somebody's going to be open.
Yeah. And then my last point, this is something I'm a little worried about, and I kind of want to, and I am interested to see how it looks on Thursday and then, you know, and then really the rest of the season. Joe Marino tweeted this out, and I'm glad that my eyes saw this, and he's tweeting about it just about 5-10 minutes ago. The Bills ran the ball on first down 75% of the time in week 1, second most in the NFL. First half, 72.7 first down run rate, 7 yards per carry. It's a 66.7 success rate. Second half, though, 76.5% first down run rate, 3 yards per carry. That is a 35.3% success rate. And that was something I noticed, and I'm glad the numbers are saying it was not just, you know, a failed eye test. They stuck to the run on first down way too long, and it did become predictable. I get you're playing a team in Arizona who had a near historically bad run defense last year, and it was working in the first half. So was throwing the ball, and it did seem like they weren't willing to be aggressive enough in passing the ball down the field on first down enough, especially when you look at Allen's like almost 80 completion percentage. You're having guys get wide open. Everyone is catching the ball. I don't think they had a single drop on Sunday. I would have liked them to be more aggressive on first down, not just that last drive where I think they had like 5-6 straight runs and ultimately don't go for it on 4th and 3. Again, I'm okay with the explanation. I would rather my coach be definitive in what they thought rather than change it last minute to placate to not kicking the field goal of death. I'm fine with it. I don't have to agree with it, but I'm happy with that explanation. I just would have liked them to be more aggressive on first down, especially when ultimately you were doing what you wanted on offense. It was a bad turnover by Allen and a few bad penalties in the first half that stopped you. Arizona's defense wasn't doing anything to you. And then once the second half started, I mean, you saw, like, up until that kick return touchdown, it's that kick return touchdown, but they were up 11 kicking it off to him. I mean, the game was all of a sudden now double digits. And if you're Arizona, you're sitting there going, we were up 17-3 a minute ago. What happened? And so, you know, that was really my only complaints. It's week one. You do have to take it with a grain of salt. Teams are very much rusty, to say the least.
Is it safe to say we could still take like the preseason pledge in week one?
I don't know, man. I am now becoming somebody that I think your starters do need to play more.
Football
board in week one was rough.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, you know, it still feels, this week at least, felt like the preseason still.
Mm-hmm.
For every team, not just for the Bills. And even the Bills weren't even that bad to say it felt like the preseason, but just in terms of the entire NFL, it felt very preseason-esque because you had all those penalties in the first game on Thursday night. And then in Friday in Brazil, you had all sorts of crazy stuff going on where the players were falling all over the field.
Oh, the field conditions were atrocious.
The game itself was just wild.
Yep.
And then everything this weekend was, you know, the Steelers don't score an offensive touchdown and win a game.
That was beautiful.
The Bears.
That was beautiful.
Caleb Williams doesn't do anything.
Doesn't even throw for 100 yards.
No.
Beautiful.
And is the Bears curse real? Maybe. Is my fantasy team tanked? Probably.
Did I take too much Caleb Williams? Maybe.
Potentially. But I just think that it's kind of like preseason week 4, I think. And I hope the NFL gets away from that or finds a way to kind of Maybe this is just this year, but I was looking at some touchdown numbers, and over the past few years, past five years, touchdowns were in like the 50s and 60s in week one, and the past 2 years, they were both under 40.
I think a lot of that, though, is due to defenses. They're taking away big plays. They're making you be methodical down the field.
And run
less sexy to watch.
Yeah.
But if a team is willing to do it, it can become very fun to watch because it's a lot of yak. It's a lot of just, you know, sure, you always get the phrase dip and dunk quarterbacks. You know they're not taking shots down the field. You're still somewhat able to. It's not as bad as it was like a year or two ago where it was just – you know, too high safety, don't you dare throw the ball more than 30 yards. It's going to be an interception. But teams are going to have to then start coming back in because you're giving up too much underneath. And then you'll start to see these quarterbacks like Allen, like Mahomes, they'll start taking moonshots again. You know, they will get a player on their team that can stretch the field. The Bills have guys like Marquez Valdes-Scantling, who they did go to. It was a miss by Allen. Khalil Shakir, you've seen, has been able to go down the field.
Mm-hmm.
It's there. It's just going to take some time for defenses to start start worrying about the underneath throws.
I got it here. So it's Steve Palazzolo, and he tweeted out yesterday before the Monday night game, 2019. There were 61 passing touchdowns in the first week.
Mm-hmm.
Then it went down to 52 in 2020. Back up to 61 in 2021. Back down to 51 in 2022. Last year it was only 37.
Mm-hmm.
Before last night. Total touchdowns in week one was 33. And how many touchdowns were scored last night?
Rodgers
had two, right?
I'm going to find out now. I thought he had only one. It was the Alan Lazard one.
One, yeah.
And then Brock Purdy had none.
None?
Yeah, Brock Purdy had no passing touchdowns.
Nice. So 35. 35 touchdowns across the entire NFL. That's half of what we got 4 years ago. So you can definitely see the shift happening, but
that's why. But I don't know. But that's why I haven't been worried that Bills maybe are going to run it a little bit more. They're
exactly,
not throwing
the
ball down the field.
That's what I'm thinking too. But
they're I'm not saying they're trendsetters. They're doing the smart thing.
Mm-hmm.
They're not forcing a square peg into a round hole.
But at the same time,
just because
time,
they have Allen at quarterback
in all of these numbers,
that was a big problem with Ken Dorsey last year.
Yeah, but at the same time, though, there is a team in all of these years mm-hmm. that has had the most touchdowns, most passing touchdowns,
mm-hmm.
and you kind of want to be on the higher end of that. Which, I mean, I don't think the Bills were this week, but week by week, maybe they are, maybe they aren't. It kind of depends on who you're playing.
Yeah,
I think that. It's the first week of this transition year. I think it's okay that there were only two passing touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and I'm saying only. I mean, that's a good number. You know, it's not like
it's fine. Yeah,
it's not
solid.
Like you're fighting tooth and nail for one. You had two relatively simple passing touchdowns. I mean, the one to Mac Hollins, he's wide open up a seam pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
And Khalil Shakir, I mean, that one was a little tougher to get.
Shakir
was just fantastic on it. So yep. I think that we'll see this number again. This is just week one stuff, but mm-hmm. I think that if the Bills can stay just middle of the pack to higher end on these passing touchdowns, I think we're going to see a successful team.
Yeah, I agree. 803-0550 is the number to call if you want to give your thoughts on week one. Those are always welcome. But we're looking ahead to week two as the Bills do have a short week. They're taking on the Miami Dolphins in just 2 days, Thursday night football. We already know Taron Johnson, he is out with a forearm injury. Don't actually know how long he's going to be out. Sean McDermott, Bills head coach, would not give those details. Allen, though, full go even after that little bit of a scare with his left hand. What do you want to see from the Bills in week two? Do you want to kind of see this continued? Everyone eats, 10 guys catching the ball. And what about the defense as well? A good second half performance. First half, though, we didn't get to touch on it too much. Real concerning against Arizona. 803-0550, again, the number two call. Zach Jones and Josh Schmidt here in the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. And this is
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them. Yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Why does this room look amazing? What'd you change?
Oh, I just got these custom shades from Blinds.com. It's all online, so it's really easy. Great price, too.
Ugh, I remember shopping for Blinds. I waited around all day just to get a quote.
Hi, sorry I'm late. I know you said just the bedroom, but what do you feel about the
bathroom? I feel like I had to say yes, just to get rid of her.
All right, just go ahead and sign here and we'll get everything taken
care of. It took forever, and the worst part, hidden fees. How about you?
I chatted with my Blinds.com design consultant on my time, got free samples, and it was all super high quality at a great price. Plus, they make it easy to DIY or add installation like I did.
Blinds.com sounds way better.
Way better. And everything comes with their 100% satisfaction guarantee. Plus, check this out. I can control them from my phone.
Whoa, magic.
There's a better way. Shop Blinds.com for up to 45% off. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's an ice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Odyssey celebrates National Hispanic Heritage Month, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
UGR.
I'm glad we made those adjustments. Players look like they got into a rhythm in the second half, and some of that comes from just waiting for Kyler maybe to try and get out of the pocket instead of going to get him in an aggressive fashion. And, you know, look, it's first game, so there's a lot of unknowns, and you haven't been back in the saddle for some of those guys in a while, so I'm glad we played ourselves through it and coached ourselves through it, but we got to be better overall in terms of affecting the quarterback and also making sure we keep contained.
There was Buffalo Bills head coach Sean McDermott giving his thoughts on the week one 34-28 win over the Arizona Cardinals. And on that point, we tweeted out, on a short week, what do you need to see change from the Bills heading into week two? So let's get connected to the fans. Brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shop online at northtownkia.com. McDermott brought up containment there. I think that was a big thing for me. Murray in the first half running the ball was really kind of able to do what he wanted. It was where a lot of their first downs were coming from. And Dominic has this to say, tackling. For the love of God, tackling. Trip the guy if you have to. Miami will house you if you miss a tackle. I take the 15-yard penalty any day.
I completely agree with it because I remember sitting there just almost wincing, being like, ah, there he goes.
You're white-knuckling the couch because you're like, I saw it coming. Yeah. Everyone saw it coming, and he's still gone.
Right, and I think a part of it is just kind of not knowing what to expect. I mean, Kyler Murray hasn't played an NFL game since...
No, I mean, he played 10 games last year.
Eight, I think.
Yeah.
But still, you haven't seen him in 4 years. Let's put it that way.
It feels like it, yeah.
It was.
Oh, for the Bills, yeah.
For the Bills, you haven't seen him in 4 years. So, and you don't know what he's going to be like coming off that injury. I know he played last year, but at the end of that season when he did play last year, it didn't feel like the Kyler Murray we had always seen, where it was, you know, he's all over the place and he's making these crazy throws. He's got the run ability. But it felt like they were just kind of... Let's see what he does here. Let's give him a bit of a cushion and adapt to it.
And honestly, did in the second half.
Yeah, and honestly, that's one thing that I've always been happy with the Bills coaching staff for is they know how to adapt at halftime.
Yeah.
It has never been a problem to adapt at halftime.
Their biggest problems on defense continues to be injuries, which they're dealing with it now with Teron Johnson in their nickel corner spot. Cam Lewis filled in that role very, very well.
Right. Yeah.
But, I mean, that is something they're going to have to deal with now. We don't know how long Teron Johnson's out. I don't believe
it's out for this week.
He's officially out for this week. It is on a shorter week. That's not too surprising, especially when he was ruled out of the game on Sunday. Mm-hmm. I think it was more just like, please don't be a broken forearm. Like, don't be, you know, all right, he's done for the season kind of deal.
To be fair, you have 11 days off coming up.
Yep. You'll have a longer break
before the
Jacksonville game.
I hope that it's something that can heal within 2 weeks.
Yeah. That'd be nice.
You know, you have to see how Miami goes on Thursday, because if you look at Miami and Jacksonville compared to each other in terms of what would you need Teron Johnson for, obviously you need him more for Miami, but I mean, Jacksonville still also has kind of the ability to do what Miami can do.
Yeah.
In terms of get the ball downfield, have some wide receivers with speed. You're going to be facing old pal Gabe Davis. So you kind of know what you got there. But look at Brian Thomas Jr. You don't know what you have in that wide receiver. So I am interested to see what happens with Teron Johnson in terms of the next couple weeks here. But in terms of the tackling, to go back to that, it like I said, it just felt like they were kind of giving the Cardinals a cushion. And part of me likes the way they game planned, if you want to call it that, because it didn't seem like there was much of a game plan in the first half, and then all of a sudden
there was.
There it is.
I mean, because ultimately, you know, take away the special teams touchdown, the defense only gives up 20 points.
Right.
17 of those were scored in the first half.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, you give up a field goal in the second half as a defense. That's a very, very good adjustment. We talked about it. The Bills, before that special teams touchdown, were up 11. The game was completely flipped even before the first half was over with. The two-minute warning, they score a touchdown.
You score a touchdown, and then you double dip.
Which, man, I was thinking about it, though, as it was happening. I'm like, when is, like, the last time, though, they actually did double dip? Like, we all look for it, but, like, it felt like it wasn't happening as often as you'd like. Like, they would miss or you know, something would go on.
Or they'd come out of half,
and it was just like, oh, they don't look that good. Or you know, a field goal and a touchdown or what have you, or two field goals.
Mm-hmm.
Where that, it was just like, nope, two touchdowns, boom, boom, and they're up.
Yeah, and I do, like I said, I liked I like their whole ability to adjust, but you can't do that against everyone. And that's the part that scares me. And again, it's week one, but we've seen that for years now from the Bills coaching staff. They have the great ability to adjust on the fly.
Mm-hmm.
But will you be able to do that against Miami? Will you be able to do that against Kansas City?
I will tell you, though, against Miami, Tua Tagovailoa very often has a bad game against the Bills' defense.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of
it,
too, though, is the Bills know exactly how to play him. Throw him off his timing.
Right.
If you throw off his timing, everything collapses.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say, too, real quick on their performance, they played Jacksonville, who's going to be the Bills' Week 3 opponent. For all the yards they put up, I mean, Tua led the league in passing yards for Week 1. Tyreek Hill had over 100 yards. Jaylen Waddle had over 100 yards. They put up 20 points.
Let's also remember they did have an 80-yard touchdown, so I think
That's right.
They had
even more to my point, it feels empty. You put up 20 points with all those yards.
Yeah, no.
And it took an Etienne fumble, basically, at the goal line for you to not lose.
Travis Etienne had the blunder of the game.
Yeah.
It was you fumble on the goal line, essentially, and
I don't look at Jacksonville as that threatening of a team.
No.
They still have drop issues.
Yeah.
Kirk had a bad one.
And I look at that Miami, the 80-yard touchdown. You are a foot away from not even getting the chance to pull that play off.
Yeah.
Right? If ETN just doesn't fumble the football, that touchdown doesn't happen. I don't see either of those teams as a full threat. Obviously, yes, Miami has their weapons and has their ability to perform, but I don't know. I don't see much.
By the way, the 80-yard touchdown was in the third quarter. The Etienne thing was in the fourth. It was already 17-17 at that time.
Oh.
Yeah, it was in the fourth quarter. The Hill thing was in the third quarter.
Huh. I don't know why I could have swore I saw an edit this morning where it was ETN on the bench, and then, all right, let's go to the play, and then Hill scoring the touchdown.
Yeah, no.
And then back to ETN.
Yeah, no. It was already wow. It was 17-17 at the time. That would have made it 24-17, and then it's a collapse after that.
What did I see?
But so, but
I literally saw a video on Twitter this morning of the two things mashed together. Maybe someone just did a pretty good edit. I mean,
I don't know why, they put up 20 points, 400 total yards. Third downs. Jacksonville was atrocious. 2 for 10.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, you brought it up. That's the Bills' next two opponents, and they both looked shaky. They both looked.
I didn't leave their games thinking
Miami had to win it on a field goal.
I mean, to be fair, this is going to be bad on me because eventually it's going to bite me. I'm not scared of Miami.
They're good. Give into it. Let's go.
But they're a team, even if I was like, let's say, you know, just for argument's sake, the first thing that comes to my mind is Cleveland, just because at the end of Jeremy and Joe, we listened back to that call, electric. But even if I was a Cleveland fan, I'd look at Miami. All of their stats feel incredibly empty.
Mm-hmm.
All of them. Tua led the league in passing yards. They finished second in the division and collapsed at the end of the season, only to lose immediately in the wild card.
Yeah.
And then this year, 400 total yards, 20 points, one of which came on an 80-yard touchdown, which could absolutely happen to the Bills.
One of which came on a field goal, or three of which, I should say.
But I don't know. And again, I think this is going to bite me at some point because eventually they're going to beat the Bills like in a serious moment.
Mm.
But I look at this, I'm like, it's a night game. They have never shown they can stop Josh Allen. And now the Bills, I think their biggest issue on offense, and we'll see if this continues, their biggest issue on offense the last 2 years is after Diggs, they had nobody. Gabe Davis was way too up and down
now
to be any sort of consistent weapon. Dalton Kincaid was a rookie last year. You saw it in the receivers they brought in free agency in Sherfield and Hardy. Not consistent enough. And then you even go back, years prior. You know, Gabe Davis is a fourth-round rookie. Emmanuel Sanders is literally playing his last year of football. John Brown ages very quickly. They never really were able to have that consistent number two guy that could take that defenses had to take seriously. And you saw it on Sunday against Arizona. Yes, it is an incredibly small sample size. But with Kincaid is being triple to quadruple covered. Ray Davis, Khalil Shakir, open. All right, we'll go to Kincaid here. Keon Coleman, one-on-one, go to him. And it was just ba-boom, ba-boom, ba-boom. Everybody was playing. Everyone was doing their role well. Everyone was catching the ball. And it made the offense at times on Sunday feel very, very easy.
Honestly, this offense, I feel like we've said this before this offseason. I can't remember. Now that we're in the season, it's not the offseason. Days are flying by. But I feel like this offense is just the inverse of what they had last year. You have so many guys for your secondary targets. Now you don't have your number one.
All right, so you were right. On the Etienne fumble. That was in the third quarter.
I'm
blanking out. I thought that it was that's my bad. So it was Etienne fumble.
I got
literally
really
the next play is the 80. I thought it was 17-17 at the time. It was actually 17-7. They were going to go up 24-7, put the game out of reach. Then it's that's my bad. Sorry about that.
I got really nervous. I was like, "What?"
Hobbs tweeted it in.
What did I see?
Yeah, Hobbs tweeted it in. Thank you so much. That's my bad.
No, you're good. I was nervous that I was going crazy.
Real quick, that is my one complaint of, having to work the games. I don't get to watch the Sunday. I barely watch the Bills games. I have to rewatch them.
Mm-hmm.
I usually will record them and watch them that night. I just don't get to watch football, which is slightly frustrating. But that's one of the issues there is I was convinced that was in the fourth quarter towards the end of it. It was in the third quarter. It still would have put the game closer out of reach. I thought the game was tied, though. That's my bad on that. Sorry about that.
It's fine. Whatever. You're making me go crazy. But all right. Back to what I was saying, though. I just think that when you look at these two offenses, last year and this year, you're just looking at an inverse of the other. And I think it's hard to say, but I think that if this offense works out, what does that mean for the future? What does that mean for planning, right? I mean, if you have a team of guys firing on all cylinders and working it out every single game—
What do you do
in the future?
I think it's going to be the thing is where all of a sudden you see, Dalton Kincaid goes from week one. He's again, it's one play, yes, but I'm going to make fun of it. Quadruple covered, but by week four or five, it's like, guys, Khalil Shakir is like leading the league in receptions. We need to key up on him. And all of a sudden, Kincaid has the one-on-one matchups.
That's where it's hard because you're saying the league would switch.
Well, yeah, because they're going to see what's happening. And that's my thing. It was never Stephon Diggs. I think his efficiency dropped for the Bills, and sure, there may have been issues behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the Bills' biggest issue on offense last year was after him, there simply just was not another guy to go to.
Yeah, and I think that now that you have basically a team of guys to go to, I'm
excited.
After the first game, I'm kind of inclined to think that that'll work better.
Yeah, absolutely. 803-0550 is the number to call. What do you need to see changed heading into week two, if anything? I mean, the second half performance by the Bills, you're hearing me and Josh talk about it, was very impressive. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt will read some of your tweets, take some of your calls after a quick timeout. We'll also hear from Sal Capaccio coming up at 11 o'clock. Bills practice at 12 today. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, and this is WGR.
Odyssey celebrates National Hispanic Heritage Month, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
If your day sounds like,
we need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through, you deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame,
two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the markable fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
And a minimal salary cap hit. Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
People will come, Ray. They come to Iowa for reasons they can't even fathom. They turn up your driveway, not knowing for sure why they're doing it. They'll arrive at your door as innocent as children, longing for the past. Of course, we won't mind if you look around, you'll say. It's only $20 per person. They'll pass over the money without even thinking about it. For it is money they have, and peace they like.
Ray, just sign the papers.
And they'll walk out to the bleachers. Sit in shirt sleeves on a perfect afternoon. Find they have reserved seats somewhere along one of the baselines. Though they sat when they were children and cheered their heroes. And they'll watch the game. And it'll be as if they dipped themselves in magic waters. The memories will be so thick, they'll have to brush them away from their faces.
There is the iconic voice of James Earl Jones that was in Field of Dreams. Passed away yesterday at the age of 93. I mean, just that, Josh, I tweeted yesterday, crushed me. Yeah. I mean, I was heartbroken at that one, too. Mm-hmm. Some celebrity deaths, you know, it's sad. You feel bad. But you don't know them on a personal level. You just, you know, yeah.
But you felt like you knew James.
That one, a guy I obviously do not know. It was just like,
well, right.
I mean, man, he's the voice for a father of a generation with Mufasa in The Lion King.
Yep.
One of the best performances
voice
ever.
Voice of two fathers.
Well, and then the voice of the most iconic movie villain of all time with Darth Vader. I mean, and every time he did that voice, he was, I mean, for many people, that is the iconic thing of Star Wars, is Darth Vader, and specifically the voice.
I still remember figuring out who voiced Darth Vader. Like
finding out it's not the guy that actually like was in the suit.
Right, but I also, but just because I remember well before I watched Star Wars, just, I mean, as a kid, you know, you're not going to watch Star Wars right away as like a 4 or 5 year old. Like when I was introduced around like 6 or 7.
Yeah.
But what I saw first was The Sandlot. And Mr. Myrtle.
Yes.
And then I figured out as I got older, Mr. Myrtle voiced Darth Vader.
Yep.
It was just kind of a weird, you know, mind-blowing moment of like, wow, that's the same guy. I never realized that, you know?
Oh, and so good.
And that scene there from the Field of Dreams, too. I mean, just listening to that took me back to when I went to Field of Dreams. And it's like, man.
So good.
And obviously, you know, the scene is theatrical and it's a movie and everything like that. But like when you listen to him and then when you're actually there, it feels like that.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
It's not just a line in a movie. Like that's how it feels when you're actually at Field of Dreams. It feels like that. And it's so cool. I once again recommend anyone that can go there, please check it out. But that,
news yesterday, James Earl Jones, 93 years old, passed away yesterday. Just an unbelievably iconic voice in Hollywood. One of the fixtures in Hollywood.
Yeah, Jeremy and Joe were saying, was he top three? Morgan Freeman, James Earl Jones.
Who's three?
I put James Earl Jones over Morgan Freeman, to be honest.
Ooh.
He voiced
James
the most.
Earl Jones is above for me.
Yeah, but it is close.
It's close. Will say.
I know
it's
Morgan close. Freeman's voice, but in terms of like voice acting roles,
right? Yeah.
He's
I think because he voiced Darth Vader, that kind of takes the cake.
Yeah. Mufasa's also like.
Well, you're a Disney.
That's
guy.
That. I'm not even that. Lion King is my favorite movie. Ever.
Oh, okay.
That performance is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
So good.
Okay.
So
hey,
good. He will be missed.
No,
and if they use AI to bring his voice back. Mm-mm. Hellfire is going to rain from my Twitter account. I am going to be so furious. I'm so serious. Let it lie. Let the performances be there.
Are you saying AI for Darth Vader or
anything for his voice? I will lose my mind. I hate it. It's gross. Same with the de-aging technology to put the actor. Stop. Just recast the roles. It's fine. We'll get over it if you have to do it. 803-0550, the number to call. David Butch, we'll get to your calls after a quick timeout. But first, at the top of the hour, we will hear from our own Sal Capaccio. Bills practice at noon today. They are on a short week as they get ready to take on the Miami Dolphins down in Miami for Thursday Night Football. This is the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR.
Quick hitter to Shakir. Has a blocker in front. Down to the 3-2. Reaching for the goal line, and he's in! Khalil Shakir with an 11-yard catch and run for the touchdown. And Spencer Brown gets the spiking honors.
There was Chris Brown on the call. Khalil Shakir's touchdown from Sunday. The Bills 34-28 victors over the Arizona Cardinals. We go now, though, to the Wester Hotline as the Bills are on a short week to take on the Miami Dolphins for Thursday Night Football. And Sal Capaccio joins the show. Sal, good morning. How are we doing today?
Good, guys. Good morning to you, too.
Also on that clip, though, Spencer Brown got the spike. Sal, we actually finally, it feels like I've been waiting 2 weeks for this. Mm-hmm. It hasn't been that long, but we do finally have reported numbers on Spencer Brown's contract. Do you want to run through that real quick?
Yeah, it appears as though, obviously, different ways to structure things, but it appears as though it's a 4-year contract extension, $72 million in new money. He gets just shy of $20 million, fully guaranteed. This is all according to Over the Cap. I know a few other places have put it out there, but I'm reading, you know, what they wrote. $16 million roster, $16 million option, excuse me, bonus, and a roster bonus, $7.1 million the year after that. 25 is the option, 16, and then roster, 7.5 the year after that. Anyway, it's a good way to saying that this appears as though 2025, locked in, a lot of money, and then, hey, if things don't go well, then you can reassess what you want to do. There would be obviously some hurdles and financially, but they could make some maneuvers. But and then the more I look at it, to me, it looks more really of a 3-year extension more than a 4-year extension. And then, you know, it's very reduced at the back end. But overall, I think the bottom line is here. The Bills identified a player that they really like, that's young, that's ascending, and they now have their bookend tackles locked up, both Deion Dawkins on the left and Spencer Brown on the right for the next several years.
And I will tell you, Sal, the way I saw it initially, you know, first seeing it this morning was, it was the old, we have faith in you, you are ascending, but we just want to make sure, just in case anything goes wrong, injuries, what have you, we can get out of this, and it's not a contract that you know, they are looking back at it, fans are looking back at it and calling it, you know, a huge failure. They leave themselves an out, which I think is smart, while also, you know, commending the player and giving him, you know, the correct salary for what he's valued at.
Yeah, for sure. Listen, I mean, I just tweeted out a little while ago today that one of the things that I get fascinated by is how fans immediately look to, when can we get out of a contract when a guy signs it? And I get it. I'm not saying that you shouldn't wonder that, and I'm not saying that things can't go wrong. Of course, I get all of that. But the goal shouldn't be to get out of a contract before it ends. The goal should be, hey, this guy was good, and we got a good contract here, and if we go out to term, and that would be great, and then you sign another one. And, of course, that's not normal, right? Along the way, there's going to be maybe another extension, maybe a tweak, maybe it does go poorly, but this is a contract here that it looks like the Bills did exactly that. They said, like, we really have faith. He had some injuries early in his career. He's played really well. We identified this player, so now we're going to kind of move forward with him. And just so you know, now both them. So Deion Dawkins, you know, his contract is looking here, 3-year extension. So what, 20, 24, 25, 26, he's locked up for. And now this puts, let me find Spencer Brown here through 27 here. So if I have my years right. So there you go. 28. Thank you. So Deion through 27, Spencer through 28, because Deion's was also an extension because he had 1 year remaining.
And as you mentioned, I mean, that locks in their two tackles here for the long run. Sal, we are, of course, on a short week here. The Bills play in 2 days down in Miami. We already had the quote-unquote first injury reports. Both teams, though, were participating in a walkthrough. Real quick, though, me and Josh here, we're sort of wrapping up our thoughts for week one. We haven't been on air since last week. For me personally, and I obviously I heard you on yesterday with Shope and the Bulldog, I found myself really agreeing with your point where Josh Allen didn't need to be Superman on Sunday. He just happens to be that guy. Like he that's what he does. But ultimately, this is something I've been banging the drum for all offseason, is that the Bills just want to have a ton of dudes at the skill position players, guys that are going to do their jobs correctly and take some off of Josh Allen. He's not going to have to make hero throws constantly. And I feel like you saw that on Sunday, where I think 10 guys caught passes, and there was even, you know, people are going through the All-22 now. There was a point where Dalton Kincaid is quadruple covered, and he just, you know, takes the dump off to Ray Davis and he keep moving. The offense, to me, Sal, felt like, outside of a few bad penalties and a bad turnover by Josh on, I believe, the first offensive drive, they were moving with impunity.
Yeah, I agree. And this is the point I was trying to make over the last couple of days. This was not a Josh Allen hero ball game. This was a Josh Allen did special things game. That's what it was. He wasn't asked to, and he didn't have to necessarily make incredible plays for them to win. He just happened to have those. I think the way the offense was moving, they may have scored anyway if he doesn't run in the ball and jump over Buda Baker. I mean, you go to the first half of this game, James Cook was averaging close to 7 yards a carry. I mean, they were moving the ball. What they did, though, was they get down in their first drive, and Josh gets sacked, and he fumbles. Then the second drive, they go down and get stopped in the red zone. They have to kick a field goal. In fact, they had a touchdown call back on the second drive, right? Josh Allen ran one in. So, yeah, I don't take away from this game some of the – now, if you look at the box score, this is called box score scouting, right? If you look at box score and you say, Josh had two running touchdowns, he had two passing touchdowns. Boy, they really needed him to be Superman and put on the cape. No, I don't think that's right. If you watched the game and you were there, you watched it on TV, you understand, and you saw that the Bills actually did a really good job moving the football. They didn't need Josh Allen to do that. That's just how he plays. That's just who he is. He's a special player. He's a special athlete. So when it came down to it, there were a few plays to be made. I think this team was still in a good position offensively, independent of Josh having to make those plays. But, of course, he is a guy that you don't want him to not do that, right? I mean, if that's what's going to make your offense special, then why not do that? So, yeah, I didn't think he had to be a Superman. I just think he was because that's who he is. And look, the Cardinals did a really good job in the second half of buttoning down on James Cook after he averaged 7 yards a carry. He only averaged 3.7 yards for the game. So in the second half, he really didn't have anything, and they kind of smothered him. So they did a nice job, and that's when Josh had to kind of take things over a little bit here and there. But I just think that they played a really sound, good offensive game outside of the sack and fumble and the penalties, which really, really hurt them a lot.
So, Sal, also looking here at the box score, one guy that I feel like most of us and most of Bills fans probably thought was going to kind of burst out, maybe even in this first game, Dalton Kincaid. He only had one catch, 11 yards on two targets. You really worried there, or you think it was just that Arizona was game planned for him specifically and it just led Allen to other opportunities?
Not worried whatsoever. He's going to be a big part of this team. And if his impact is double and triple teaming him so other people get open, then that's great. I mean, this is what this offense has been designed for. It's what we were told it's going to be going all the way back to March, to April, that they're going to have what everybody eats. That's their mantra. Look at everybody eating. 10 different players had the ball thrown to them. 9 different receivers caught passes, whether it's tight end or running back or whatever, 9 different players. I mean, if you would have told me going into the game, the leading receiver for the Bills would have 4 catches for 51 yards, I'd be worried. Think about it and look at it and say, wait a minute, that actually worked pretty well. 4 catches, 51 yards was the high watermark. That's Keon Coleman. But then you had 3 for 42, 3 for 32, 2 for 25, 2 for 15, 1 for 23. I mean, it's incredible. It goes down. All 9 players who caught a pass for the Bills, excuse me, including Dalton Kincaid's 1 catch and Dawson Knox's 1 catch and MVS's 1 catch and Ray Davis's 1 catch, all 9 players who caught a pass for the Bills had double-digit yardage. I mean, this is the definition of everybody eats. I'm not worried whatsoever. I think he will be a big part of the game plan. And all that's going to happen now is maybe Thursday night the Dolphins do the same thing and they say, we're not going to let Dalton Kincaid beat us. Well, then Josh has to throw it to other people. Eventually, teams will have to start covering other people and Dalton Kincaid's going to get his targets and he's going to get his catches.
What do you think that means long term, though, for Kincaid specifically? I mean, if teams do stay on him, you know, in these double, triple, quadruple coverages, as we saw in the one highlight, and let's say we're in week 9 and that's still happening, how do you think the Bills could adapt that and maybe try to scheme him open more? Like, is that just something that we'll have to, cross that bridge when we get there? Or what do you think that could mean long term?
I don't know if you can scheme someone open if the defense is concentrating on triple teaming them. I mean, it's just
right.
That's what they're going to do,
yeah,
right?
That's true.
I mean, it's going to be hard. At that point, you're forcing the ball, and I don't think the Bills want to do that. I think the Bills want to get away from any sort of concept of forcing the ball to someone, right? They'll adjust. I do think, and this goes back to something we talked about a lot in this offseason, and we saw it on that one play in the 23-yard gain. I do think this is where Dawson Knox comes in, guys. I think Dawson Knox is going to be a bigger part of this offense than people realize, and that might be because teams are going to concentrate on Dalton Kincaid, and now all of a sudden you have another tight end who is a good pass catcher who you say, all right, well, if you want to do that, we have another tight end here we could either block with or we could put on the route and we could throw it to him. And that's why I think Dawson Knox is going to have a bigger role this receiving game than a lot of people expected coming into the season.
Moving on now to Thursday night. As I mentioned, kind of, Sal, as you came right in, we've already got the first injury reports of the week. Both teams participating in a walkthrough, so it's kind of more of a projection if full practice was going on. But for the Dolphins, of course, the Bills, Tyron Johnson already out with a forearm. I feel it's not too surprising. He was ruled out on Sunday. Now it's more of a see how long it is. But for the Dolphins, Devon Achane and Raheem Mostert both would not have practiced. Sal, what do you make of that, especially with the Dolphins' run game and the speed they use in the backfield?
Well, we'll see where this goes as far as, Thursday night. I will tell you right now that their offensive coordinator, Frank Smith, is speaking to the media, I think even as we talk right here, and I'll just read you some of the reports coming out of Miami. Frank Smith, he does not yet have an answer for Devon Achane and Raheem Morris' status for Thursday. Now, he is the assistant coach. They're asking him. Typically, the head coach handles those duties. I don't know. It could very well just be they're going to lay off them, and they'll see if they're ready for Thursday night, or they're going to be ready, but they're laying off them a little bit. That could be the case, or it could be where they're out one or both of them, and obviously that would be a big blow to them. It is a short week for the Miami Dolphins, too, not just for the Buffalo Bills, and obviously Josh Allen's injury, we know he's cleared. Taron Johnson is not going to play in this game. We know Smoot is most likely not going to play, but the Dolphins dealing with some injuries, and if they're going to be out Achan and or Mostert, that impacts what they want to do. Jeff Wilson is there. That's a guy that they will give the ball to. So they have a couple of guys, and you know they run a type of offense where even on their offense, like everybody eats a little bit, right? It's Tyreek Hill, but in the backfield, they've kind of rotated through the last couple of years under Mike McDaniel. So I would expect that they'd have guys ready to go, but those would be big blows, either of those guys missing.
The Dolphins also for week one had a comeback victory. Ultimately, an Etienne fumble kind of keeps them in the game. What did you make from their performance against Jacksonville? Ultimately winning 20-17, but very much we're staring down the barrel potentially of a 24-7 deficit late in that third quarter.
And did you see how the game turned at the goal line there? I don't know if you guys saw the play. I mean, I saw the highlight and I didn't like wasn't dialed into the exact play, but apparently, I mean, Travis Etienne was running into the end zone. He was literally at the 2 yard line, and it was a peanut punched out the ball. That would have made it like 24-3. And they got the ball back. They scored a touchdown. Then they got it again. They scored a touchdown again. They wound up winning the game. I mean, hey, if you're a Miami fan, I mean, that's going to go a long way for confidence. And oh my gosh, they had this big comeback. That's great for them. So you know, obviously starting off 1-0. Now these two teams are 1-0. So I was looking last night, guys, the AFC East. I was wondering if the Jets had won, every team in the East would be 1-0. I went back and said, when's the last time that happened? I found the answer. 2015. Everybody was 1-0 in the AFC East to start the season, 2015. But that did not happen because the Jets lost. Mm-hmm. So they're 0-1. But this is an early – whoever wins this game is in first place in the AFC East until Sunday, at least, until, you know, the Patriots play. And then we'll see what happens there. But, you know, look, I mean, I guess I was surprised the Dolphins only scored the amount of points that they scored to come back and win, only scored a couple touchdowns. I mean, this is an offense that we all know has been near the top or at the top of the league. They do a lot of things, especially early in the season, that teams are trying to adjust to catch up to, but didn't seem like now Tua did throw for over 300 yards. He was only one of the only quarterbacks in the league this week to throw for over 300 yards, which is really interesting, right? So, you know, they still have a lot of offensive firepower. They still have a lot of offensive weapons. And, of course, we saw the big playability they have on display, Tyreek Hill with an 80-yard touchdown.
Sal, you mentioned the AFC East there. The Jets last night. I was not able to watch the game, but you know, kind of following Twitter and such, it felt like the Jets, for all the hype they get and everything, it seemed like it was, yeah, they've got Aaron Rodgers, who's 40 coming off an injury, Garrett Wilson, and Breece Hall, and that's their whole offense. And I know we've got a few weeks here until the Bills do take on the Jets, but it sort of felt like if you're a Jets fan, everything bad that you thought could happen outside of injuries seemed to happen. I mean, even there was a period where people were confused. Why is Sauce Gardner not on the field? And yeah. I seemingly never actually got an explanation for why he was not on the field.
Yeah, I agree. I was going to ask you guys, did we ever find that out?
It just he was not on the field, then he went back in, and everyone was like, I guess he's back in.
So, listen, Aaron Rodgers looked older and immobile to me. That's what he looked like. When he stood in the pocket and he had some time, he threw some lasers and some darts and very accurate. That's what he does. I mean, he's one of the greatest ever. But he really didn't move much, and he stayed there. And when the pressure started coming, he wanted to make sure he got rid of the ball so he didn't have to. You know, and that's obviously what people are wondering about here. He didn't quite look like, you know, the Aaron Rodgers in his prime. Not that he should or people expected that. But I think Jets fans were hoping maybe to see a little bit more, a little more mobility, a little bit more of hanging in there. And, you know, however that would go, it just seemed like it was a little bit too rough, you know, to make those plays. Breece Hall did not have a great day running the ball. I'm going to go back and look. I don't know his – let me see what his overall stat line here was, because I know he had some yards later in the game. 16 for 54, 3.4 yard. And that was including late in the game, you know, once it was in doubt and this 49ers started subbing, he had a 16-yard run. I mean, you know, I don't think the offensive line did a great job there. Breece Hall didn't have very – good numbers. I know that, you know, Garrett Wilson looked really good. Alan Lazard made a couple of real nice catches. Obviously, he had two touchdowns as well. But the big thing for me that really surprised me about the Jets, after the first quarter, their defensive line just got pushed around. I mean, Quinnen Williams was getting pushed around. It just seemed like they were always 2 or 3 yards back. You know, the 49ers were pushing the line of scrimmage. And I did not expect that from the Jets defense, obviously. And, you know, people talk about Hassan Reddick and what, I don't know, how much does... You put Hassan Reddick in the field last night. How much of a different game is it? I don't know. Is it really that much of a different game? I just the way that the 49ers played and the way the defensive line was getting handled after the first quarter there for the Jets, I'm not sure it was.
And I think that's a fair thing to bring up. Like, how much does Hassan Reddick really bring up? And as well, I think a thing that's always kind of ignored with the Jets, or we'll all laugh about it and then sort of forget about it. This is on the offensive side of things, but like Nathaniel Hackett's there, and there were reports that the Jets sort of wanted to move off of him or get somebody else, have someone else call the plays. It just – that seems like an organization that is just desperate for any kind of success. Come hell or high water, they're going to do anything. They're going to move anything to do it, and nothing seems to be working at all. And partially because they're not making smart moves. I've loved Joe Douglas's drafts. But then there have been other moves, like the Hassan Reddick trade, that just leave you scratching your head going, who is actually making decisions in there?
Well, listen, they're clearly going all in, and they're really going high risk, high reward for a lot of the things that they're doing. There's no doubt. But that's what happens when your jobs are on the line when you have this drought. It's, you know, it's as long as the Sabres drought, right? It's the longest playoff drought going on in sports right now. So there's no doubt that they're trying to do whatever they can. I respect that on a level, which is like, hey, they're trying to win. They're trying to do it. But obviously, there's a lot of risk that goes along with that. And if it doesn't go well this year, they might have to reset again because you're not going to see Joe Douglas or Robert Saleh in that building anymore. And I don't even know how long that can go this year. But if you're a Jets fan, you're obviously very disappointed and upset about last night. But look at the upcoming schedule. Mm-hmm. A lot of opportunity for them. They're at the Titans. They get the Patriots at home on a Thursday night. Then they get the Broncos at home. Then they go to the Vikings. And then they have that big Bills Monday night game coming up. So the next four games for them are very winnable games for the Jets. But, you know, if they play like they did last night, I mean, you could say, okay, maybe not. But I think they'll probably play better, being they will have lesser opponents too.
The Denver Broncos. Bo Nix either had 21 or 22 completions at some point in the third or fourth quarter for like a 111-yard sale. What offense is that?
Yeah, but isn't this what happened around the league?
Yeah, you know?
I mean, this is what was going on in the league this week. You look at the yards. How many quarterbacks threw for 300 yards in the NFL this week? Do you guys know?
Just Tua.
Tua and Matthew Stafford.
Stafford.
Well,
that's
and
right.
Sal, we were talking about it too. I found a stat earlier. There was only 35 touchdowns, passing touchdowns, in the league this year in week one. Last year it was 37, and the year before that it was like 60. It's this steep drop off that. It just came out of nowhere.
And, well, I don't know if it came out of nowhere.
It's been
Haven't we been talking about this? I've been talking about this since the owners' meetings and talking to people about these too high shells and how teams are just – nobody's allowing you to go over the top and make these big plays. But I agree with you that, like, it's a very steep cliff to drop off, Josh. No
doubt.
Well,
that's why
like that. Yeah.
That's
but
what I'm
I don't. I think this is what we've been building towards and trending towards for the last several years in the league, how these teams don't want to let that happen to them. They're like – heck with this. Why are we letting teams throw over the top? Why are we letting these teams beat us with these big plays? If you're going to make a big play, it's got to be by you running through us because we can't tackle you, right? That's what it's got to be. You know, you talk about those guys, and then I'll bring up Caleb Williams as well. Where's Caleb Williams on here? What did he have? His numbers.
Not good.
I mean, they were not good at all. And yet they wound up winning, of course.
I mean, they did win. Will Levis's interception. Sal, have you seen that?
Correct.
His pick six?
I did. You know what I thought of, right? Oh my God, that's Josh's rookie year. Like,
yeah,
it's just Josh trying to make a play.
The reaction is great, where he just falls to his knees, hands on the helmet. It was just,
it's art.
Yeah,
Williams, 14 of 29, 93 yards. Yeah,
I didn't think he got over 90. I thought he was at 86. So that's they win, but like that's like one of those Bears win ever, where it's defense, special teams, touchdowns, and the quarterback.
I mean,
you're like, oh, what was that?
Did you see how the Steelers won? They kick six field
beautiful
goals.
Beautiful football, Sal. That was beautiful football. Yes. That is the most Steelers win I've ever seen.
Isn't that exactly right? That's the Mike Tomlin kind of ran of football. I was way more disappointed in the Falcons, though, to get only 10 points. Kirk Cousins, 155 yards, two interceptions. Bijan, 68 yards rushing, 3.8 yards a carry. Like, the Steelers didn't do anything special. Justin Fields threw for a $1.56, did not throw a touchdown. They kicked six field goals and win.
Just, oh, man. And Kirk Cousins did not look healthy. I saw something, too, of like they took like 90% of their snaps out of the shotgun, and it's not good. Sal, though, before we let you go, because we know practice starting at noon, we want to let you get over there. We've been talking about throwing the ball. I got to ask you about college. Syracuse isn't playing this weekend, but Kyle McCord.
Nope, they got a week off.
Kyle McCord. Where did
Looks
that
great.
Come from?
Well, you know, I think that maybe, you know, you have to consider – at Ohio State, he didn't have to be the guy, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's so many great players around him. And you just throw the ball up, Marvin Harrison's going to catch it, and you have great receivers and running backs, offensive line, great defense. You know, five stars everywhere. At Syracuse, he's got to throw the ball. He's got to make plays, and he can. And they're showing that. And by the way, Syracuse does have really good receivers.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Neronde Gadsden is considered a tight end, but he's, you know, transition from receiver. But they do have very good skilled offensive players to help him. I'm just really happy. Fran Brown, he deserves, after really, you know, he came in and he just seems like such a guy that wants to, you know, do everything right and, you know, get this program turned around. And for him to be able to get those two wins to start the season is just awesome. And now I'm really kind of wondering here, you get Stanford in a couple of weeks, a chance to go 3-0.
ACC matchup against Stanford.
I know, right?
Because the border gore in college football is awful. Got Stanford and Cal in the ACC. What a time. All right, Sal, thanks for joining us, man. Enjoy practice. We'll hear from you later today.
Yeah, Sean McDermott, by the way, speaks at 12:45 p.m. to the media down here. So we'll get an update on, you know, injuries, practice today, and then practice will be at in the 1 o'clock hour, 1:15, I believe, is when it starts. And then we'll hear from players after.
Awesome, Sal. Thanks, man. Talk to you later.
You got it.
That was Sal Capaccio there on the West Her Hotline. And, yeah, real quick, we do have to hit another timeout here. So, Butch, Dave, hang on the line. We'll get to you after a quick timeout. But, yeah, the border gore in college football is atrocious. The Pac-12 is dead, which, by the way, like every Pac-12 team keeps winning in their new conferences. I'd like to bring that up. USC actually is playing defense. That's incredible. That's never happened before. But, I mean, the idea that Cal and Stanford might at some point in the next few years play for an ACC championship and put that on their resume, not okay. Not okay. We used to be a proper country. College football used to be I actually love college football. I think it's in a great spot. I really, really do. I think the transfer portal is awesome. I think teams are using it correctly. We'll start to get some guidelines to it. It's going to work itself out. You're not going to get mercenary players because ultimately it's proven to not be great. You need guys that are actually buying into the program. But
look,
I am very excited for where college football is
at. I'm at the point with college football, though, with their conferences. The ACC, yes, it's the American what?
No, it's the
Atlantic. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Sorry, I don't know where I got American from.
It's like in the name.
No.
It's like, what are you doing
here?
Yeah,
that doesn't even change anything there. So if your name has a region of a country, of the country, you have to stick with teams inside that region. Please.
The Atlantic Coast Conference. It's rough.
Please. Just, you had the Pac-12, bring it back, and call it a day. Just stop.
I mean, I can't wait to tell my kids stories about, you know, Pac-12 after dark.
I just
Arizona State versus Arizona at midnight Eastern time.
I just don't understand it. Why get rid of something that works?
TV contracts.
So what?
I feel bad saying if we
figure
had TV
it out.
Contracts.
It's all about the money, man.
Yep. Yep. 12-team playoff, though. I think that is
That's good.
I think that's going to be a roaring success.
But you didn't have to blow up a conference for that.
No, that's fair.
Yeah. I was going to say, where are you going with this?
No.
How are you going to defend that?
You didn't need to do that. But I am excited for the 12-team playoff, namely because team seasons are not dead after one loss. I think that was always a tough selling point for college football of, you know, to have any teams play anyone of serious note in week one, but be like, oh, but by the way, if you're on the losing end on a neutral site, stop playing this year because it's over. It's a really tough selling point. And, you know, as someone that's a Texas fan, I watched the beginning of the Michigan game with some nerves. After that, it was all hunky-dory and it was a lot of fun. But, like, there was, you know, in years past, it had been like, don't lose. Doesn't matter that it's a non-conference game. You cannot lose. Like, you'll be out of the top four, and it'll be nearly impossible to get back in. I mean, goodness. Florida State went undefeated and couldn't get in the four because their quarterback play was so bad. So I think the 12-team playoff is going to be a lot of fun. Week three, though, not really any huge marquee matchups. I'll be writing about that, though, coming up Friday this week, and I'll be doing that throughout the season as well, kind of giving a preview over at our website, WGR550.
The Texas preview.
No.
Yes.
But they will have a piece, most likely. And they're going to be one of the best teams. They're ranked number two in the country. You just got to deal with it. You got to deal with it.
Bills, I can't make fun of you about Texas anymore. I got to figure something out.
Oh, some of my friends are really reeling. That was like the one thing they had.
Well, yeah.
Because the Angels, it's self-deprecating. I'll follow you.
Right.
Texas hurt.
Well, yeah, I know. And I used to make fun of you for it. Yeah. Now I can't.
803-0550 is the number to call. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt here until 12 o'clock. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR.
I thought Dalton played a really good game. You can tell that the defense was really concerned with where he was on any given moment, and it kind of opened up for some other guys. And I don't think that was maybe necessarily intention, but love to get him going a little earlier. But he had some of the best blocks in the game, and it didn't bother him at all. And so everyone eats kind of mindset. If people are focusing on him, it opens up for other people. And so I was pleased with, after the game, how excited he was with only one catch or something like that. So obviously he's a good football player, and he helps us when the ball's in his hands, and we'd love to get him more of it, just like a lot of the other guys. But all he cares about is winning, and that's a lot of the guys on our offense.
There is Buffalo Bills offensive coordinator Joe Brady talking about Dalton Kincaid there. me and Josh have been mentioning, we talked with Sal there in the last segment as well, of just, you know, you're looking out the all 22. The man was doubled to triple to quadruple covered at times, and it really opened up avenues for, well, as the Bills are saying, to let everyone else eat. Ray Davis has one target for one catch. It goes for 14 yards, and it's on that play that we've been joking about, this quadruple coverage. You know, and that's the thing too. Teams are just not going to be able to keep doing that. They just won't survive, especially because, I mean, the Bills have a bad turnover and some bad penalties. You could chalk up the penalties too. I mean, they had 9 on Sunday. You could chalk up that too to just week one.
Some of
didn't
it,
get
though,
a lot of reps in game.
Was
well, yeah.
I mean,
bad calls.
The Jamarcus Ingram one was bad.
That one, yeah.
That was really bad. Not on Ingram, on the right.
No, because he didn't. He literally didn't touch Murray. Yeah. But it's
well,
fine.
He did, but he touched the lower body, and that's. Kind yeah, of
like
okay.
He clearly tried to
yeah,
get away.
He yeah, tried yeah. to get out of the way. That's the main part of
yep.
that. But it, I mean, half of those penalties I don't think get called later in the season.
I think the worst part too, though, and you know it's a really bad day, is when I would argue also Arizona was getting screwed a few times as well.
Well, I mean, to be fair, the one Allen roughing the pass where Allen gets roughed, I think was a bit soft and mm-hmm. maybe a bit of a makeup call. But you don't know. You can't. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't really fully speculate on that sort of thing, but it's the first week of the season. Everyone's going to have some rust, and
everyone in the league pretty much did.
I mean, look back to the Chiefs and Ravens game.
Yeah, it got better.
There was like 85 flags in the first quarter. Not really, but it felt like it.
It was so
every
bad.
Other play, the offensive line of Baltimore was getting called for.
I mean, Ronnie Stanley was just.
But it was.
That
What's he
rude.
Supposed to do? Stand on this line of scrimmage? Like
it felt rude.
It looked like he was moving forward every single time, and they're, nope, you're still not far enough ahead.
Yeah. Harbaugh's telling him, just move him forward. Just tell him what. It was bad. 803-0550 is the number call. We're talking now week 2. The Bills do have a short week. Starting practice at noon. Bills head coach Sean McDermott's going to talk to the media around 12:45. Hopefully get more of an update heading into Thursday Night Football against Miami. But we're going to get to connected to our fans, brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shop online at northtownkia.com. We're going to go to the phones, and we've got Lou here on the line. Lou, good morning. How are we doing today?
I'm doing well. You guys hopefully are doing well, too. Enjoying your show.
Thank you.
I'm mostly calling about Joe Brady. I don't. I think he's a very good passing game coordinator. He proved it last year with the last 6 or 7 games where he concentrated on the run. I believe that it's egregious that he had Allen just throw 2 passing attempts in the first half prior to the 2-minute warning. I think he sets up Allen for heroic efforts. I don't know if it was you guys that called Allen a Superman, but he is. But he's not utilizing Allen's best, which is passing downfield. Allen's a superior runner too. But relying on like James Cook in the running game, when you have Allen, best player in Bills history, is just idiotic. But maybe he can't scheme the passing game.
I get your point. I don't agree with it really at all. I think he is a very good passing game coordinator. Look at the LSU year. And even in Carolina in 2020, he had almost 3 receivers at 1,000 yards with Teddy Bridgewater as his quarterback, mm-hmm. making him almost a 4,000-yard passer. The team was not successful. And we're looking at Carolina. It was not really his fault. Arizona was one of the worst run defenses in the NFL last year. In the first half, they were running at almost 7.5 yards per carry. Why would you go away from that? Look, I'd like to see Allen pass the ball more. They also didn't really have the ball much. Their defense wasn't getting off the field. He probably would have had more passing attempts, and ultimately in the 2-minute warning, he went up. I mean, he ultimately ends with 23 of them. They moved the ball well. They were moving it efficiently. Again, 9 guys caught passes. 10 guys ultimately were targeted.
I think that's going
to... I would like to see less first down running attempts. We talked about that. Mm-hmm. Joe Marino had the stat where they ran it 75% of the time on first down. That was good for 2nd in the NFL through 1 week. I'd like to see that less. I think a lot of it, though, was schemed up for this week because of Arizona's historically bad run defense, where last year, I think that was due to necessity. They didn't have an option post Diggs, or even after Diggs. Even with Diggs, it wasn't that great. They were still targeting him a lot. It wasn't going anywhere.
Right.
They went to Shakir and Kincaid to try to get it going. And ultimately, James Cook finished last year 4th in the NFL in rushing. It's not idiotic to do that.
Yeah, and I think, too, also, with the, like you brought up how they kind of game plan for Arizona, and obviously every team game plans for their opponent, but I think the Bills game, like the look game to game is going to be much more drastic than it has been in years past. I think, let's say this week with Miami, right? I think it's going to be heavy passing. And then, you know, next week against Jacksonville, I don't know. We're going to find out. But let's say it goes back to the run game. And I think you're going to see much more of a drastic shift. Obviously, you see shifts from game to game. But I think it's going to be a lot more drastic and pronounced than you see for other teams or you've seen for the Bills in years past. It's going to be a very game-dependent, team-dependent. Who are we playing this week? What are we facing this week? Let's go heavy into this, heavy into that.
Well, yeah.
I think that's what Brady does, though.
That's the correct way, I think, to do it. It's right. A lot of, like, yes, Josh Allen's amazing, but we talked with Sal about it. We talked about it in the first hour, too. Like, the numbers in the NFL for passing are down. Teams are not making are making it near impossible for you to beat them going down the field, passing down the field.
And honestly,
that's what got Ken Dorsey fired, was that he would not adjust to what defenses were throwing at the Bills. He said, no, we're going to go deep. I don't care that no one's getting open.
And if you want,
we're going to go deep.
If you want to think about it from a season-long perspective, it's not going to be for every team, it's not going to be the scenario for everybody, but if later in the season, the later you go, the more injuries that pop up, the more fatigue there is, the just everything changes as the year goes on. If, let's say, you know, week 12 rolls around, who do the Bills play in week 12? Is that their bye week? That'd be funny.
That'd be good.
I think it's week 14.
Is there
close? Very close.
That is close. I would have been really funny though if that was week 12.
No, week 12 is their bye.
No way.
I just looked at it. Week 12 is their bye.
Okay.
All right. Well, okay.
That's funny, though.
Week 13.
Against San Francisco.
All right. So San Francisco comes to town. And, you know, the 49ers are banged up in the secondary, right? And the Bills haven't been a passing offense for much of the year. Now you have all these tricks in the bag and things you've been saving for the right moment against a tougher opponent, right? And I'm not saying that's going to be the scenario, but if you can have this where you kind of unfurl things as the season goes along, rather than this is our scheme, this is what we're doing all year, all at once in week one, I think that gives you a little more of an element of surprise. It kind of gives you that, you know, bit of an edge because you're looking for that this year. Without having a number one wide receiver, you have to look for a different way to make that offense dynamic. And if you can just become unpredictable, which it's hard to do, but if you can be more unpredictable than most teams, I think you kind of get that dynamic effect back that you lose by not having a number one wide receiver like Stephon Diggs. If you can just create that in a way, and I think Joe Brady can. He seems to be a very good offensive mind, and he seems to have a very in-depth, I guess, or I don't know what the word would be. I don't want to say galaxy brain, but it's kind of the thing that's coming to mind, right? Where it's, you know, you're thinking of everything and anything all at once, and you're just plucking things out of the air and going at random.
And I will also say, though, for, again, this is just week one, and I've been looking for this tweet because Joe tweeted it out, but it's from Hayden Winks, who got the NFL week one neutral pass rates. Mm-hmm. The Bills ranked 14th. They were middle of the pack. Mm-hmm. In week one in terms of passing the ball, and they were going up against a historically bad run defense, which, by the way, for much of the first half, they were carving up.
Yeah, and it makes sense to do that.
It was correct to do it.
That's the right way to game plan. Now, if they had a great run defense and a great passing offense or passing defense, hey, or a bad passing defense, you're obviously going to pass the ball. It's that part of it is very straightforward.
Problem.
But I just think that, like I was saying, I think you're obviously going to look at those things in game plan, but it's going to be just a drastic shift rather than like this subtle, you know, oh, we're going to run it a little less this. No, it's going to be, hey, if we're not running it, we're not running it.
My biggest problem, though, was the first down run rate. That even when the running game started to not work, that when Arizona keyed in on the first down runs, they didn't go away from it. Mm-hmm. That's my only issue. I do wonder, though, how much of that, you know, kind of came down to the end of the game where it's like, we're carving them up. We're moving. Let's not change it up. We're doing fine. Mm-hmm. You know, they can't really stop us. And they just kind of kept the ball rolling rather than, hey, they're totally stopping first down runs. Let's switch to passes. I do wonder if it was kind of just in the moment everything's still working. We're fine.
Well, and there is points too where obviously you need to switch what you're doing because it's not working. But if it is working, if you have, you know, 2-3 big runs from James Cook in a row, switch to a pass, catch the defense off guard. You're going to catch them off balance. It's not that's where I'm a little nervous. I don't want them to get too set in stone in like what they're doing, but I'm interested to see how much variation we see throughout the season.
Yeah. Let's go back to the phones here real quick. We've got Butch on the line. Butch, good morning. How are we doing today?
Good, gentlemen. Thanks so much for taking this call. I have a couple of things to say, plus an add-on based off something you spoke about earlier. But before I get started, number one is I love WGR. I love MSG the fans. I definitely know I love you guys. But I want to just touch base real quickly on James Earl Jones. Let his family, my condolences to all the fans like myself, my mom, my grandparents, because years for years and years, I have sat at Christmas tables, Thanksgiving tables, and even sat in front of a television and watched this gentleman, class act, far as what he does. He does it perfectly. Not only that, he's a class gentleman, number one. Secondly, he's an icon. Thirdly, he walks with a purpose. And fourth, his purpose has words. His stature of how he carries himself as a gentleman is a lost art in today's life. So all the young people like yourself, Zach and Josh and all you guys, all the young people, because he's 93 years old, whomever, you know, Darth Vader was one of his characters. He didn't wrote books for little kids and everything else. But I just want you guys to understand his legacy is that he has always been a class act gentleman. Always remember that. I'm going to put that on the show. And I thank so much for taking this call. I want to get right to it. You had a call just a minute ago, just spoke before me, and I totally disagree with him. Reason why, no disrespect to him, I love him, but I disagree with him. And the reason why is this, because it kind of piggyback off what I really want to talk about. We had Ken Dorsey here in the office with Stagnant. Joe Brady came in last year from he's down like 6 games to even get to the title, even get to the playoffs. He designed whatever he could. He took some groceries out the cabinet and put together a meal. When we ate it, and we made it. We just ain't win it. But at the same time, now moving forward with his own style now, I love the running game. I'm glad the running game is resurrected back here in Western New York. This is a cold weather city. I'm glad that it's here. Yes, unfortunately, sometimes people don't like the run because we got a class act quarterback with a rocket arm and who's a superstar in his league. But at the same time, you have to have a balance. And I think Joe Brady has a balance office. I'm not calling to throw Brady under the bus. I'm saying this on this one thing, and I'm going to get to my last one, and I'm going to hang up. But is this, I just want him, because I'm going game to game now. I just want him to look at his backs more, throw more screens. Instead of the 13 package, just run 11 package. If you're going to run a 13, you're going to use a fullback, keep Gilliam on the side, bring Ray Davis in. You're going to put him in motion. At least Josh got an option that he can throw a screen pass or a pass to a quality back, not a fullback. That's my only take on that. I don't have nothing else to say bad about Joe. I wouldn't have nothing to say bad about Joe at all. Keep doing what you're doing, Mr. Brady. I love you, brother. Now, on the defensive side of the ball, this is what I spoke to Chris and I spoke to Steve yesterday regarding this matter. And Steve kind of misunderstood what I said, about Von Miller with his four fingers in the ground, moving him around. Not changing the position. But if you watched the Jets game yesterday, you saw Williams, they big D tackle. They moved him to a defensive end so he can get one-on-one action where he can better off and penetrate. The same thing Kansas City does with Jones. They'll move Jones from D-tackle to D-end. All I was saying is with Von Miller at his age, let him roam to find the right gap where he can tap somebody on the butt, they can slide over, where he can get the one-on-one penetration. That's the only thing I say about Bobby and Coach McDermott with Von Miller. But besides that, guys, we got a nice thing going here. But I had to speak about James Earl Jones for all the young people who don't know him. Just don't blow this off. This is really, really an icon that this world has really lost. He's class act. And I love you guys so much. Thanks for taking my call. I love MSG. Love WGR fans. You guys have an outstanding day, and I love you.
Thank you for the call, Butch, and very well said on James Earl Jones there. And, yeah, to Josh's point as well, I think it's going to be a lot of week-to-week game planning, and it is also going to be to see how often defenses are zeroing in and the too high safety look. But we've got to take a break here as we've got Sabres Live coming up at 12 o'clock. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones and Josh Schmidt here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. It is brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. Bills practice starting here in just about a little over 5 minutes here, starting at noon. We'll get more of a look, too, at the rest of the week when Bills head coach Sean McDermott speaks at about 12:45 today. Teron Johnson already ruled out due to that forearm injury. Josh Allen, though, full participant in quote-unquote full participant in practice. It was a walkthrough yesterday, although there was some worries with that left hand injury. While the Dolphins, Raheem Mostert and Devon Achane out yesterday for practice, also a walkthrough. But on a short week, you can't really be a not practicing player and hope to play on Thursday night. Mm-hmm. And that's two guys, two speedy guys, two guys that are massively important to their running game, and for a team to only put up 20 points, and as you know, we talked with Sal about it too. I mean, it took a bad fumble by Etienne, and then an 80-yard touchdown, and for them to kind of light it up on offense. But
like
they were
52-yard field goal.
They
or whatever.
Were dead in the water there for a little bit.
Speaking of Allen, real quick, he has a new Gatorade commercial out, and talking through his underdog story. And it is really good.
I'll have to check it out. It's really been good. A little bit since
kind of gives
heard
you
about
goosebumps.
The fireball story
because you remember the
like
story,
that.
And it's like, oh wow, there
yeah,
it is.
That was big in the draft process in his rookie year. All right, it's going to do it for me and Josh today. We'll be back on the next 2 days for the Extra Point Show, Wednesday and Thursday for game day. But you're listening to WGR. Up next, Sabres Live.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Why does this room look amazing? What'd you change?
Oh, I just got these custom shades from Blinds.com. It's all online, so it's really easy. Great price, too.
Ugh, I remember shopping for Blinds. I waited around all day just to get a quote.
Hi, sorry I'm late. I know you said just the bedroom, but what do you feel about the
I feel
bathroom?
Like I had to say yes, just to get rid of her.
All right, just go ahead and sign here and we'll get everything
it
taken
took
care
forever,
of.
It took forever, and the worst part, hidden fees. How about you?
I chatted with my Blinds.com design consultant on my time, got free samples, and it was all super high quality at a great price. Plus, they make it easy to DIY or add installation like I did.
Blinds.com sounds way better.
Way better. And everything comes with their 100% satisfaction guarantee. Plus, check this out. I can control them from my phone.
Whoa, magic.
There's a better way. Shop Blinds.com for up to 45% off. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly! Auto Parts.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.